Japanese tennis champion Naomi Osaka was the star of the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games on the weekend, lighting the cauldron in a scene reminiscent of Cathy Freeman in Sydney 21 years ago. The ceremony mixed modern technology with tradition, displaying a more somber tone than I think most had probably expected, to reflect the difficult context of holding a large sporting event like this in the middle of a global pandemic. Tradition plays a big part in Olympic ceremonies, but where do those traditions come from? Matt Bevins took a look at this. Hi, Matt.
Good morning, Fran. Yeah,
what did you think of the opening ceremony?
I thought it was kind of nearly brought me to tears a couple of times, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I wasn't necessarily
it was very
expecting.
Somber.
Yeah.
A friend of mine described it as ghostly, and I thought that was quite a good description.
Yeah, I think appropriate though. I mean, what else are you going to do in the situation that it's in? But you could see the importance of tradition in it, and it's important to the Olympic Games in general. It was highlighted last week during the now infamous exchange between Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk and AOC President John Coates.
You are going to the opening ceremony. So far as I understand, that there will be an opening and a closing ceremony in 2032, and all of you have got to get along there and understand the traditional parts of that, what's involved in an opening ceremony. So no, none of you are staying behind and hiding in your rooms, all right?
Then while watching the opening ceremony on replay on Saturday morning with my kids, I was explaining all the little traditional elements of what was going on, and I found I kind of struggled to figure out what the source of most of it was. How old are these traditions, and which of them have anything to do with the ancient Olympics in Greece? Just to begin with, I can't play you any audio of the ceremony because of the fun new tradition of being extremely controlling of the broadcast rights for the Olympic Games. But I can use the Olympic Charter to help out. It says there is an Olympic flag, which must be the largest flag at the Olympic site. That five-ring design is from 1914, first used in 1920 at Antwerp, the last time an Olympic Games was held during a pandemic. Then there's the Olympic hymn that's played while the flag is raised, which is all about the immortal Olympic flame, its connection to the ancient games, that kind of thing. The hymn was written for the 1896 Games, but then wasn't used again until 1960. The head of state of the Olympic host must declare open the games with the same words each time. An oath is given by athletes promising to be sportsmanlike and not to cheat. That began in 1920 and has changed a number of times since then. And then, of course, there's the flame. The first Olympic cauldron to burn throughout the Games was used in 1928, but the torch relay began in 1936. Here is the first time that was used. That is the head of state of Germany at the time, Adolf Hitler.
That was Herr Hitler announcing it open. Now they're all cheering him, and the whole crowd have raised their right arms.
Raising their right arms in the Nazi salute.
Now this is the hymn. Here comes the runner. He's got his torch. He's a fair young man.
The Olympic torch relay was invented by Nazi official Carl Diem. Its intent was to link the Nazi regime to the thousand-year civilization of ancient Greece. While that part didn't really work, the tradition of linking Olympia, the home of the ancient games, to the modern games via a torch relay endured. And by the time of the 1956 Games in Melbourne, it was considered completely normal.
It all began some 2,730 years ago on the plains of Olympia in Greece. Although historians differ, most agree that the game started as a religious festival in honor of Zeus Olympus, the Greek god of gods. Here, in 1956, the simple ceremony is reenacted. The first priestess has placed the crater on the Hyrian temple altar and asks Zeus to bless its purpose. Lightning signifies the given blessing, and the Vestal virgins place olive branches around the altar. The first torch is lit, and the flame, kindled by the rays of the sun, starts on the longest journey in Olympic history.
But how much of the ancient Greek tradition remains? In 2012, British archaeologist Neil Faulkner wrote a book called A Visitor's Guide to the Ancient Olympics. He explains there were three purposes of the ancient games.
It's partly about the athletics and coming into contact with celebrity. It's partly about genuine piety and devotion, and religion is as important as the games. But it's also a holiday for the boys in company.
The Games, which ran for around 1,150 years, which is quite extraordinary, was a place for the male citizens of the disparate city-states of Greece to meet, conduct ritual sacrifices to Zeus, discuss politics and, well, do what men at the time apparently often did when their wives were at home in a makeshift athlete's village full of many slaves.
The ancient Greek world in 388 BC was divided into about 1,000 different city-states. Many of these city-states were rivals, They were often at war with each other. So this is an extremely divided and competitive world. And it's a world which puts huge emphasis on sport, partly because all of these city-states depend for their armed forces on a citizen militia made up of their adult male citizens. So there's a sense in which Greek sport is war without the shooting. Every single one of the events, in a sense, is mirroring the kinds of qualities which a fighting man needs.
So running, combat sports, horse riding and archery.
War without the shooting,
there,
I love that.
Yeah, it is good, isn't it? The people travelling there were kept safe by a sacred truce. While they were there, they engaged in a lot of politics, forming new alliances with other city-states, announcing new wars, playing tricks on each other, trying to embarrass their rivals on the sporting field. So the modern games is hopefully a little bit less vindictive than that, although obviously politics is still a big part of it. One of the most surprising things for me that Neil Ferguson says during his book is that even the marathon race wasn't a thing at all in the ancient games.
A lot of people assume must relate back to ancient Greece. Mm. After all, marathon is a place in Greece. It's a place in Greek history. But in fact, there was no marathon race in any Greek sporting festival. The marathon race didn't exist. It was a run made by a messenger from the battlefield of Marathon back to the city of Athens to report the victory of the Athenians over the Persians in 490 BC. It wasn't a sporting event at all.
So the thing that's basically left over from the ancient games is the quadrennial event, the idea of there being a truce around it, some of the central sports, though not the marathon, though. But pretty much everything else, in terms of the tradition, was made up in the modern era and changes regularly, including in Tokyo, where the Olympic motto has just changed. Faster, higher, stronger was the original motto in 1921, but that has now changed in 2021 to faster, higher, stronger, together. A good change for the times, Fran, and one that hopefully will remain.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. Matt, thanks very much.
Thanks, Fran.